This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
But you'll never find one that's great either. It's right. Like you'll never find, like, oh my god, the best teriyaki restaurant open. That's not a sentence that I ever uttered in this time.
Because we have good Tim Hortons.
Yeah. Better Tim Hortons.
Yeah, no, we definitely. Yeah, yeah. Don't go to that one.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I want to find out what makes a Tim Hortons better.
Wawa is
usually staff. Yeah.
Okay. You have some that are really nice and you get your stuff on time, and some of them are really slow.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Now I know. Now I know.
Oh man. Oh man. You know, I was gonna say if this was a wedding, then clearly one side of the family came
over. Oh. Well, it's not.
Can you just pretend you like the groom?
The right hand side. The right hand side is brought by a shotgun.
I can sit here. Yeah, I can sit here. Maybe
that's the
yeah,
side.
No
the bride and they just want to watch. Yeah. They're here for the train wreck. Parker's like, no. Just watch, give
it
5 more seconds.
There you go.
Boom. Speaking of 5 more seconds, I think it's about time.
It's about 5 more seconds.
I've never seen that. People like want to view as a priest. I thought he was just there.
That could be really good.
No, I'm awful with weddings, though. Don't listen to me on it.
What does awful at weddings mean?
I know nothing about them.
All right.
Well, then, so relative
be my wedding.
Relatively
You'll be very disappointed.
Relatively new concept.
My idea of a Canadian wedding would be really, really bad. Canadian wedding. What's another Canadian wedding? A wedding in Canada.
So,
is there, curl the ring down the aisle.
A poutine toast.
Yes, you do.
A poutine toast is offered.
Yeah, of course. Like, I don't know. There's no such thing as a Canadian wedding.
Greasy, cheesy, gravy fries.
It's like the royal wedding from the Canadian episode of South Park, where the Prince of Canada gets married to the random person.
To a random person?
It's someone who's important. I don't remember.
How dare they besmirch our prince?
And we should probably do this podcast because it's funny.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's
this
funny.
All content
because it's funny is all I'm saying.
Welcome to No Direction Live at PaizoCon 2018. I am one of your hosts, Ryan Costello.
I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param.
And I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
And we are joined by a very special guest.
Hi, I'm Mike Selinker.
Mike, what makes you so cool?
I'm pretty great. in a PaizoCon, so I'm president of Lone Shark Games. In a PaizoCon context, I'm the lead designer of the Pathfinder Adventure card game, which we are doing some fun stuff here with. I also launched the Titanic line for Paizo years ago. I wrote the Harrow deck.
That's so cool.
Oh, that's one of my favorite things. We should talk about that.
We will.
So I've been hanging around Paizo for, I don't know, like 12 years, maybe more. And you know, just watch them go through, you know, all sorts of crazy, fascinating changes over the years, becoming a totally new intellectual property publisher and all that, and have sort of just been around them as they grew up, which has been kind of cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. So you're like the Yoda to their Luke.
I am. I'm totally that. I blindfold them and tell them to just swing around randomly till you hit something. That's actually close.
That was Obi-Wan. He said Yoda. You jump on their back and they have to do flips.
Indeed. They would also agree with that. So you are visitors from afar.
We are.
So I decided to welcome you in the traditional Northwestern way.
Whoa, what is this?
Yes, I have brought Pock Pock. it is soda. I have three options for you. Pacific Northwest soda, Thai soda as it is. We have grapefruit, Thai basil, and turmeric.
I'm kind of curious about Thai basil.
Thai basil, which would you like?
Anything but grapefruit.
All right. Turmeric. All right. So uncork those.
Go.
Uncork those.
These are twist offs?
Yes, they are twist offs. Okay. They're tart and bubbly.
Right.
Say.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Thanks for the preparatory statement.
Yeah.
Feel free. All right, well, hold on before you take a sip. Okay. I want to give a toast to Parham for his first PaizoCon.
Congratulations!
Thank you, mate.
Absolutely. Oh, I may have forgotten to mention that they're vinegar-based sodas. Oh, that was a thing I probably should have said earlier in the part of this conversation.
I feel like you're setting us up here, Mike.
No. I mean, this is a thing that we have in Seattle.
Well, I'm glad there's mints on every table.
Yeah.
So, the first taste isn't bad. It's kind of sweet. And then the vinegar washes over your tongue, and you're like, what am I drinking?
Yeah.
So I think by going with the basil, I actually was protected from that surprise, because I wasn't expecting toast sweet.
Oh, no, I was not protected. I took the brunt of this assault.
All right, no, but please, feel free. Drink those by the end of the show. Right, you guys are monitoring their... You guys are on my side. They should drink these by the end.
Is this like the drop bear of Seattle?
It's a little bit.
Did you print this label on the laser tag?
How do you spell turmeric again? Actually, my wife brought those home, and she did not notice the words drinking vinegar on the side.
Yeah,
she just said, Mike.
Drinking vinegar.
Yeah, Mike would love a turmeric soda. Like, why would she think that? That's unclear. But I had some at home and felt that since you were foreigners
to Seattle,
we would totally get duped by this.
You would enjoy
our
local.
Anyone needs to clean their glasses or like their
you would enjoy. Yeah. You would enjoy our local customs. That's right, Alexander. That's how it should go. All right, I'm glad you guys are.
We're gonna have to move on from you until I can forgive you.
Yeah, I don't expect that will happen anytime soon. Welcome to our domicile.
Thank you. All right, well, we're going to talk a lot about the ACG and the Harrow card. That's kind of a cool surprise.
Yeah.
But I do just want to focus on Parham because this is his first PaizoCon.
Indeed.
Which is almost absurd at this point. There's very few people that know and love Paizo and Pathfinder and Starfinder and everything else as much as you. So what are your thoughts so far? It's a day in.
I've had an absolute blast the last couple of days being here. This is the chillest convention I've been to.
It's really like that.
And that includes a convention that had less than 40 people in it. It was less chill than this. I really am digging it. I'm getting to meet a whole lot of fans. I'm getting to hang out with the Paizo crew and my friends. I need to make sure that this is also not my last PaizoCon.
Yeah,
nice.
This is a lot of fun.
Well, people here really really love what you do. I know that. And they have honored you for this in the past. So we are very happy to have you here.
Thank you.
I think this is the most we've hung out, like, in person.
Yeah, yeah. Because even though we're both at Gen Con all the time, he's, like, slave to a chain to Blind Ferret's booth. And so, like, I'm busy buzzing around doing all the journalist stuff. And then every so often I get to say hi to him until his boss shoos me away.
So you guys have met.
Yes.
Good to introduce you. But.
Yeah, but we usually catch at dinner. Like, that's how we got to hang out. But now we're sharing a room. Yeah, we've basically been seeing each other almost 24/7 for the last couple of days.
Aram told me that you got catfished for your room.
Nice. Nice.
I could have planned this better. But yes, there's the room sharing thread on the Paizo forums. And me and the person right after me had the exact same description of, like, these are the days we're in, this is the room. And his room was cheaper than I was paying for my half of a room. So I just canceled my reservation, went with him, not knowing him, finding out he's not on Facebook.
Nice.
I gave him my phone number. He didn't give me his. And on the first day, it's like midnight, and it's like, I don't have a room, I guess. Wow. But Parham had a single king bed, which we've been splitting. And it's very nice.
Wow. I mean.
And that is how Ryan found out that I snore like a chainsaw.
I have to say that I'm very happy that my soda was the second worst trick this convention. So that makes me feel better inside. I mean, a little better inside.
So one of the things that I think makes you a really appropriate guest for a live at PaizoCon panel is that Pathfinder is a lot of things to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And to some people, Pathfinder is really the ACG. They are super excited for the card game. And you are, as far as I'm concerned, Mr. the Card Game.
Mr. the Card Game, yes. It was interesting. The We didn't really know at the time we released the game whether or not people would embrace a second or even third or fourth iteration of the world that Paizo had created. I mean, you know, it was actually fairly, you know, it was fairly early on, maybe 4 or 5 years into Pathfinder as a, sorry, as a RPG, not as a series of supplements, right? And so, you know, it was a big gamble to try to say, no, you might like something else that we do too. And it worked out. Now there's no hesitation. Novel Line, Starfinder, right? Because there's an audience that just says, you guys are great. We'd love to take a look. We'll give whatever you do an airing. You know, it's not necessarily, I'm not necessarily going to like everything that Paizo does, but I'm going to presume it comes from a level of quality and dedication and heart that that is overwhelming. And so they try it, and a lot of them have stuck with us. In fact, it gave us the ability to put out another adventure card game. My company, Lone Shark Games, put out Apocrypha last year, and that also had significant fanfare, and especially amongst people who had played the card game from Paizo. So it's been a really nice sequence of mutual reinforcement that I think you don't always get a chance to have.
So when the Apocrypha Kickstarter went live, I kind of read it wrong. I kind of took that as maybe the adventure card game, the Pathfinder version, is on its way out, and now you're launching your own version.
Yeah, I got
that. Mechanics alive.
I got that a lot. I don't know why the hell that really happened. I certainly didn't intend it, but it definitely happened. There were people who viewed Apocrypha as the, you know, like, I'm tired of the Pathfinder card game, and thus I'll leave it behind. And I was just like, no, man, I'll keep doing this as long as they keep asking, right? I mean, the Pathfinder game was probably the most significant positive decision my company ever made.
Wow.
And so we're now 7 years into the process, I guess. Yeah, 6 or 7 years into the process. And we've got a million ideas still. We're going to keep firing on all cylinders as long as they let us.
Is the release schedule, like, is it frustrating for you with all these ideas and nowhere to put them out until you get a green light on your box?
That's often the case. I mean, we hold to... Paizo has an incredibly aggressive schedule for everything it does. And so... there are times when we've had to make something maybe faster than we wanted, and there are times when we're like, hey, TikTok, we made that thing. Where is it, right? But fundamentally, it's all about a sensible release schedule that makes sense for the marketplace and the audience. And it's worked out. We got a bit of a break after Mummy's Mask. We made, for some people, it would not seem like a break, in that we made like 16... class decks, and we made an adventure path and for the organized play and stuff like that. So it was plenty of activity, but working on a base set is like, that's real activity, right? That's everyone pay attention to this. And we got a nice break from that after Mummy's Mask to just sit back and take stock of what we had done. I mean, we made something like, we made 32 adventure boxes. We'd made 25 class deck boxes. We'd made five or maybe six adventure paths for organized play. We'd made a bunch of promo characters. We made all sorts of things, right? And we're just like, that turns out to be a lot of stuff. We made essentially 18 Magic the Gathering expansions.
Wow!
And so that's. The weight of that, all those cards, all those concepts, all those brilliant ideas the designers are just throwing in, suddenly you have a lot to keep track of. I mean, the computer that handles what did we do before is in my head.
Wow.
I mean, it's like there's no way to, you know, we search our database over and over again, but mostly I just have to know where things are, because, you know, if somebody will say, oh, did we ever do a three-headed monster? Like, I don't have a tag for three-headed monsters, right? And so I was like, yeah, okay, you got the seaweed siren from SNS 6, and, you know, and I don't, right? I mean, like, It's just an unbelievable, like, I don't think between me and Sarah Robinson, we probably know where 8,000 pieces of art are.
Wow.
Right? For this game. And she knows vastly more than that. Right? So it's just been a long, great run. And they have given us the opportunity to do something you just never get to do, which is take time to make a new version. I mean, it's completely compatible with the old version, same game, but just address all the things that we might have accidentally sent into the wild that maybe we don't like so much, right? And so we're doing an overhaul, I think is the best word. Not a reboot, but just everything got an eye on it. Says this doing what it's supposed to be doing? And we're testing that here at PaizoCon. We brought two giant boxes. You got a chance to sit in yesterday.
I did.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I was reading some of the changes, you're like, that sounds like a big deal.
Right? It was closing off locations.
Right.
You're like, yeah, you don't close locations anymore.
You don't have closed locations. You don't have, like, all sorts.
So that was it. I thought you no longer were there to close a location.
No.
Like, I was like, I don't understand this game anymore. That's gone.
See, there's all sorts of things that are in there. It's all subtle stuff, but it's just like there's a point at which you realize that people are playing your game despite the problems you put in it, as opposed to because of all the great things, right? And so because they really like all the things you're doing and they're willing to fight through whatever barriers you put in their way. And we just know we have a nice long list of those, and so we killed them all.
There you go. You slayed all the dragons.
Indeed.
You are the winner.
Indeed.
So it almost sounds like if we're using D&D edition comparisons,
sure.
Because we're all gamers here.
Indeed.
This sounds more like instead of doing like a second to third, it's more like a third to 3.5.
It's absolutely that. I mean, that was my transition. So I was one of the creative directors on Dungeons & Dragons for third edition. And I saw, there's a statement that game designers make. If you have Jason Bowman on here, he'll probably make it almost identically to the way I say it, which is that design on second edition begins the release date of the first edition, right? Because you immediately discover all the things you did wrong because the fans go, oh, I don't know if you caught this, but it's terrible. And you go, oh, I didn't catch that. And so, but I mean, we didn't want to invalidate anything, right? Like we have, we've made 7,000 cards or whatever, right? I mean, so we didn't want them, like, first off, we sure don't want anybody who has all those cards to throw them out.
Yeah.
And we absolutely don't want stores who have all those cards that haven't sold them to throw them out, right? Like, we had to make something that was absolutely a compatible and hopefully better experience for the games that we already had on shelves. And so, because we can't do like a computer game company can and just issue an errata that just permeates to the cards that you already have. You have to process it. And so it's a neat experience. I mean, it's every now and then I'm the guy who says no, we can't do that because of these cards that I'd have to issue some sort of statement about, and I don't want to talk about those.
So you don't even want to retire a single problematic card?
Oh, no, that's not the case. that would be over. There are some cards that have, let's say, gotten through all of the security systems,
right,
and are running amok out there. And they're going to – we've talked about doing some things, and I don't know if we're going to do it, but we've talked about occasionally overwriting cards that we say, this is the new version, and it applies to all of the past versions of this card.
Okay.
And it's just such a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to agree to do because you're not looking at the card and the FAQ or at the same time. You're looking at the card, and you don't want to be told you played your turn wrong because, hold on, let me pull up my phone, right? That's stupid. That's not why we made this game. So there are some cards that that there will be, I would say, subtle rules changes that make them less problematic, mm-hmm, as opposed to changing the card itself. Mm-hmm. I think that'll help. I think that, but yeah, there are definitely There are definitely head-shaking moments throughout the history of the game that we just, like, you know, I mean, Holy Candle sounded like a pretty good idea. You know, you just get 1 to 4 or 1 to 6 extra turns every game. And I was like, who said that was a good idea? Was that me? I don't remember being me that day. And so yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of things like that that are going to get polished over, I guess.
Go ahead.
This sounds like it's harder than writing the game from scratch, trying to write around an existing library.
Absolutely. There have been times. So one of the other changes is that the crew that made the original game, which was me, Chad Brown, Gabby Weidling, Tannis O'Connor, Paul Peterson, is not... All of those people are still associated with Loan Shark, right? Also, they're all... But we've gotten some new people and some really good people. Liz Spain, Skylar Woodies, Keith Richmond. We've had input from the organized play folks at Paizo. So we've had Tanya Waldridge and Linda Zayas Palmer and John Compton and all these other folks who've just flooded our brains with their opinions about what it is we've done and help us take it in a different direction. So if those people had been kind enough to be around then, we wouldn't be so screwed up. But they're
not. Yeah,
I know. But they weren't. And so what we have is a much greater brain trust now that can look back at some of the decisions we've made and rethink some of those decisions. But as Perrin said, I'm the governor switch. I'm like, I'm sorry, there's no way that you can do that without causing an earthquake in the whole game, and I don't want an earthquake in my game, so chill. And and it can cause some conflicts in the design team when we have like goals on the board, like make it more fun. Really, really hard goal.
Same but better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now I'm the killer of fun. But I mean, somebody has to sort of just sit back and say, what is the entire arc of this game? And so I'm in there being pretty aggressive about things, and other people are holding me back too. So it's been a really good ride. It was really great for Paizo to just say, We agree with you that some changes are needed, and we're going to give you the time to do it right. And they've just completely embraced our team's style because they've been working with us for a really long time.
So this break was you coming to Paizo, not Paizo requesting that you work on it?
I think we all had a desire to make some changes. It's just that you can't really make it without agreeing that that's what you're doing. You can't just, and you have to tell the public. Like you can't just drop a new version on people and say, we changed a bunch of the words, good luck. you have to softball that into the world. And so we got them to, we also wanted to change, and this is,
not
worth
baseball.
Yeah, it's not worth spending any time on. But why don't you change the physical box?
Okay, like,
the box is big enough to crush a cat. And we didn't
have you
want
done inside tests on that.
I mean,
can you scientifically validate that statement?
We have tested multiple size cats. Some of them fit in the box, and some of them don't. So we wanted to get down to a box that no cats fit in. Okay. So, which is science.
Cats will find a way to fit.
Exactly.
You said no time on it. That's ironic because I remember when we first were interviewed you, you were all talking about, this is a really awesome box, and we designed it with Lego.
Yeah.
And the insert
right
for cool.
Right. And, you know, that was really cool. It's kind of like when you ride your shiny new car up and, like, take a look, and you honk the horn, and everybody's goes, like, yeah, midlife crisis, real great. But I mean, we've had that look. So I was at a game store we have here. It's a great game store. It's called... there's a chain called Mox here in Seattle, and Card Kingdom is the sort of overarching name of the store. And so they have this place called Mox in Bellevue, Mox Boarding House in Bellevue. And I saw one of the staffers who I sort of knew, and he was sitting at a table sorting, I think, Netrunner cards, right? Mm-hmm. And I came over because he was sitting under a shelf, not a shelf, just sort of a set of hanging hooks that had all four of my bass sets, like, right behind him. And I said, do any of those ever fall on you when you do that? I said, oh, yeah, all the time. I was like, I don't want to go to jail for this, son. So we decided... We decided to take that as a hint and make a what we call it. I mean, we call it the core set, but basically it's a generic universal bass set. It's got enough cards to play, and those cards you will play with all the time. And then we decided to move away from our monthly model, which we like very much and is great for our subscriptions, but are now with 32 boxes in play. You lose track. What am I buying? Is it here? Do you stock it? Do I have to go to a different store? We decided to just make a solid box for our next expansion, our next adventure path, which is called Curse of the Crimson Throne. Ooh. And I'll be saying this at the banquet tonight. All you people, chill out. Don't post this to the internet.
I think Dan's posting it right now.
Stop it. Stop it. You will have a scoop on your own company. Good job. That's great.
Former company. Former company.
Yeah. And we'll set a record for quickest release of an invite to a banquet ever. So... but yeah, so that'll be its own box. It'll be released at the same time. And what it'll tell you is you can pull all these cards, you can drop them into the base set, and you can play, and then when you get tired of Curse of the Crimson Throne, you can grab another thing that we made, pull all the Crimson Throne cards out, put a bunch of new cards in from the next thing that we do, and that allows us to do a thing that we've never been able to do, which is different sized adventure paths. Mm. We've always had these colossal monstrosities that drop on the table with a thud because we need these to justify this giant box and all the things that go in it. You need a big, sweeping Rise of the Rune Lords style adventure. And now we can do something with a much smaller scale. So we based the one in the base set on the Dragon's Demand.
Oh, nice. Ooh, that's a good one.
And I love this thing. It's light. It's got humor in it. It's not like the world is definitely not going to end if you take the day off. Right? I mean, like, he's just like, yeah, there's a dragon and he's going to do some stuff. It's okay. You'll be fine. Right? But it's just a rollicking good adventure with great characters and super fun thrills and spills. And the kind of thing that we just could never have done before because we didn't have the space to do it, or in some sense, lack of space to do it. We wanted to do something smaller, and that allows us to maybe even get things out faster. Like I wrote all of Dragon's Demand, all the text for Dragon's Demand in one day.
Really?
Wow. And, wow. I mean, there's no, like, for an adventure path like Wrath of the Righteous, that's like 3 weeks, mm-hmm. right? And so... I can do that now. I can say, this is a thing I want to do. I can authorize it on a Monday, and we can be done with it on a Friday. It's pretty great.
So one of the things that actually excites me about you doing Dragon's Demand is that the module line is something that constantly, like, gets attention and stagnates as far as path, like the print side, the RPG side.
You get distracted, like, just like with these, like, oh no, we've got to do this thing that has the word giant in the title, right? Because we want to do all the giant slayers, and that means that's all of our RPG sessions for the next 3 months, right? Well, it's not always what you want to do. You want to roll up sometimes and say, let's go to the lake house for the weekend and beat something down, right?
Dragon.
Yeah. And so you go and you just play, you know, characters from, in RPG style, you play characters from like first to sixth level and you're done, right? You can do that in a small amount of time. And we just didn't have that experience at all in our game. I think it's very possible for somebody to get the core set that we're releasing, and you know, get it on a Friday and write a review of it on a Monday, having played it all the way through, which is, and hopefully it's got a lot of replay value so that you can keep getting value out of it. We've put some things in there that allow for things like procedurally generated scenarios and stuff, so that you can extend the life of your box as long as you want, and of course you could bring in all sorts of other adventures that other people write and so forth. So I think it's going to be a much better game when we're done with it.
I've got some bad news for you, though.
What's that?
The nature of the online reviews is they're going to buy it on a Friday, but they've already written the review Thursday. Yeah.
I've had games reviewed 6 months before they come out. I absolutely have. I've had people bash me on the internet for everything they know my game is going to contain before I have ever released any part of my game. So I don't read reviews, but it's nice to have people who at least feel they know me well enough to slam me for what I will do.
I had this one review on Everyman Gaming product that went something like, the design was good, the class was awesome, I enjoyed the flavor and the mechanics, but this wasn't a Paizo product. 2 stars out of 5.
Yeah, no. You really should have done that better.
I was like, okay.
You should have done that better. It's so obvious what the flaw was.
Yeah.
My favorite review, not of my thing, but on Board Game Geek one time, I saw an argument in the reviews between the publisher and just somebody who didn't like that the publisher reviewed his own thing. And so every time the publisher replied, it was another 10-star rating. And then the guy would reply back with a 1-star rating. And they were just arguing. Nice. And it goes for like 20 posts.
Nice.
That's kind of funny.
Kids, don't review your own product.
How much can you talk about Curse of the Crimson Throne right now?
Weirdly, we've actually been working on Curse for like 4 years now. Because kind of clumsy behind the curtain thing, but you know, we had a plan that this sounds crazy in retrospect, that we were going to do all the adventure paths in order.
Wow.
we were like, no, it's real simple. We're going to start with Rise of Runelords, and then we're going to go on to Shatter Star and so forth. And so we had like layouts of what we were going to do for like the first few paths. Mm-hmm. Early on, and Curse of the Crimson Throne is like right there in the starting five or whatever of the so I had like a plan. I was gonna be there's a version of it that where the Blessings deck is entirely replaced by a Harrow deck,
which is cool.
It's terrible. It turns out that words on cards are good in a card game. It's like, oh, and then you get this, which requires you to go to this book over here to learn what just happened. No, that's no good. So anyway, when we hired Keith Richmond, who I think everybody who plays the game probably knows from a lot of the blogs that he writes. He's run Curse of the Crimson Throne 3 times, start to finish, which is mind-boggling to me.
The RPG.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's crazy, because that's a huge adventure path, and I don't have that much time in my life. But, he came in an absolute expert, and I was like, Keith, I'm so glad you're here, because we're going to do Curse of the Crimson Throne real soon now. And then he had to wait, 3 years before we activated the project, but I think we kept it busy. Curse is a fascinating adventure because it's one of those circumstances where the world will churn around you regardless of what you do. Nice. It will get worse regardless of what you do. If you do nothing, it will get worse. That is. And so that will be reflected in the game that, you know, your success is going to have a massive impact on what happens later on. Somebody could hear that and say, I just made a legacy Pathfinder adventure card game. I'm not talking about that. But there will be significant consequences. One of the things we adopted in the core set, in the last few years, we've had an amazing onboarding tool, which is that we have this app from Obsidian, Pathfinder Adventures, and it blew out of the gates. It won a bunch of Best Game of the Year awards and so forth through no impact of my work whatsoever, right? But it was like all these people came into the player base having played it on the app, and of course, once they got over the fact that they had to set up and tear down the game themselves, which is a bit of a shock when you played five games in an hour on the app, they got to see how the game was played, and we got to see how they made the game more interesting. One of the things they did was put in a thing called wild cards, which is things that modify your game based on what level of difficulty you might like. Right, so you want to play on legendary? Oh, there's all sorts of modifications. Well, that gave us a bit of a tool, and allows us to let the game I guess I should probably say, because probably a lot of people don't know. Curse of the Crimson Throne is about a plague. It's about an environment that's just ripped apart by disease and such. And that sounds depressing, but it's actually a really great heroism style adventure. But it allows us to modify things in ways that track the progress of a plague and trying to stop it and trying to stop the lawlessness that occurs and all that. So it's pretty fun. We haven't gotten... we've been focused on the core set and getting it to PaizoCon. That's been a really important thing for us. And so Curse of the Crimson Throne has gotten a little bit less attention than it has deserved over the last month or two, just because we've been so blindly focused on this. But as soon as we get back, we're going to wrap up the core set and focus everybody on Curse of the Crimson Throne, and I think it's going to be one of the best sets we've ever created.
So of the adventure paths you've already released, those sets or those stories are a lot about showing up somewhere and punching things.
Yeah, it's certainly.
Like, that's what's before having come.
Certainly, I would say, certainly Rise of the Rune Lords and Wrath of the Righteous are absolutely that.
Pirates.
The pirates actually kind of grab you and take you along the ride in Skull and Shackles. You know, you're kind of like, where are we going today? Oh my God. Whereas you get a little bit more like sense that you are the conquering heroes in the other paths. But yeah, they not all problems can be solved by just girding up with the biggest suit of armor and the biggest sword and trying to smash.
Right, and that's where Crimson Throne comes.
Some problems still can be solved that way.
So then for Crimson Throne, you've got politics, you've got the plague dealing with, there's a lot less punching. So what are we even doing here?
You'll see, well, there's still plenty of things to punch. it's solving problems. It's being a superhero, right? It's like the world is shifting off its axis, fix that. And so that's the theme, is that you are the only thing that holds this crazy world together. Go be heroes.
So now, shifting gear completely.
Yes.
You designed the Harrow deck.
I did.
Why did we not know this?
I don't know how you didn't know something. That's not a thing I have access to. I can make sure you know it in the future. The Harrow deck is one of the best things I've ever done. So I got to work with... basically what happened is the guys who were putting together that path and what they were doing with it, said it'd be really cool to have a specialized deck of cards that represented the gypsy fortune tellers in the universe, right? And they were like, get Selinker. And I'm like, what am I? No, I don't need, you don't need my help, just go do it. And I was like, no, I want you. And so they sat me down and said what they wanted to happen, and I was like, oh, okay, I can do that. And then I immediately went over to the board and drew the whiteboard and just drew a card which had the alignment grid superimposed on it and said, I'm going to make you a game based on this. Mm-hmm. And they said, that sounds amazing. What the hell is it? And I said, just give me one artist, right? I don't want this to be like we're going to grab like all the best, you know, get Wayne Reynolds to do this piece and so on. I don't want that. I don't want that at all. This is an in-universe object. I want it to be one person's output. They sat in a hut and they made this thing. And so they gave me Kyle Stanley Hunter, who I actually kind of made sure was available because I really wanted him. And he and I just went off. We had Jason Bowman was on the team and Taylor Woodruff. And we just went off and dreamed out loud for like a week. And none of it makes sense. I mean, there's all sorts of people who have divined all sorts of meaning because that's the nature of the product. It's a fortune-telling deck. Mm-hmm. And it has, Tewin designed this brilliant method of telling stories, that is reading fortunes that are in them. So it's brilliant. So people have had to superimpose their own visions on this stuff. But the base stuff, the stuff that actually made it into the deck, is just me and Kyle just drinking and throwing ideas down. Like, it's like, I want a unicorn. And what if he had a pear, like, rammed onto his horn? What about that? What does that mean? I don't know. But it can mean so many things. Like, the unicorn could have gotten to the point where he saw a pear on the ground, was going, okay, I'm going to go eat that pear. Thunk! And jammed his head into the turf because he's got this stupid sword on the top of his crown, right? And he hasn't been able to get rid of it his whole life. Like, he's never wanted a horn on his head, right? He's never wanted that. But that's what he's got. And he sees this one pear. It looks so juicy. And now it's tantalizingly out of his reach for the rest of his life, right? Like, he's like looking at it going, man, I really wish I had that pear. Mm-hmm. And yet, I mean, none of that story is—it's just us throwing a pear on the unicorn's horn and imagining that's kind of cool. But there's so much you can do with that, right? I mean, you can make it about frustration. You can make it about reserving your supplies for later. You can make it about tantalizing your enemies. You can make it about whatever you want because there's something clever on every card. Jason and I designed a game called Towers, which you can play with it as if it's a gambling game in the world, and that led us to do the Gold Goblin in one of the Pathfinder modules, which had a whole bunch of gambling games in it that we enjoyed quite a bit. So it's definitely become a lot bigger part of the world than I think anybody imagined would happen, but it was great. I mean, it was a free reign, make whatever you want kind of product, and it has been the thing that I'm probably the proudest of in my Paizo history. I mean, I love the adventure card game; it's fantastic. But that 1 week of design with Kyle and Jason and Taylor and such was just one of the best times of coming up with something that we've ever had.
Yeah. Did you guys research the tarot when you made it?
Yeah, so I have a bunch of them at home. And Taewin is a bit of a gypsy herself, and so she had a pretty solid knowledge. So we came in with something, but, you know, I designed this thing where all of the possible combinations of the suits and the alignments were built into how the game, like, made one copy of each of those, right? And so there was a necessity to break outside of the Rider-Waite paradigm because there were just so many more directions that I had mechanically pushed the cards. So we had to come up with a totally new method of laying the cards out and them interacting with each other and stuff like that. But yeah, we did a little bit up front and then we abandoned it pretty quick.
It's still one of our better performing backlog-ish episodes is the special episode me and Alex did, just featuring the hero, explaining it, and doing live demos.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, so that's a fun one.
Yeah, so definitely go check that out. It's on our YouTube channel if you're curious about what the hero deck is.
There's also a strange following of fans that are really into Perrin's hands in that episode.
Oh, nice. It's one of those things where...
What?
So what happened was is that Perrin has all the recording equipment, so he set up his tripod and had a deck of the Haro cards, and so I had him like set up the grid, and I would explain how to do the reading through the cards as he was going through, and, you know, talk about how you draw meaning from it. It's a really cool episode. But so in that episode, you see me in the top corner explaining things, and the only thing you see of Perrin is his hands flipping the card. And we have this group of people who are like super into Perrin's hands after that episode. Like literally, they were like, so what are you going to put Perrin's hands on next? Yeah. And I was like, Perrin, did you consider being a hand model after this? He's like, they exist. My cousin's one.
We have a number of very simple rules at Loan Shark, and one of them, which I communicate to game designers? The people have asked me, like, what are the tips you need to be a game designer? Like, what are the most important things you have to do? One of them that I say over and over again is clip your goddamn fingernails. Because you're spending your entire life showing people things with your hands.
All
right. Right? Like, that is your, when you are a tabletop designer, that is your job. Right. If my hands are down here, you might as well wear a shirt that says that. Right. Because fundamentally, that's all you're doing. Like, you're just moving things around on the board and people are staring at you. So if you've got the worst manicured hands in the world, they hate your game and they don't know why. Right. So, I mean, it's just like, and so, yeah, I mean, like, if you're in the situation that you're in, obviously you attended to yourself valiantly, which I approve of.
Had you heard this advice, Param, or do you just naturally cut your nails?
I have seen enough people criticized in the hobby market, like showing this beautifully painted model for fantasy, but they've got long nails, and then they just go after them nonstop. It doesn't matter that this is probably like the best troll that ever trolled.
No, it's true. I mean, it's like, look, there's some rules you gotta follow, and this is one of them. Clip your nails.
You can be very self-conscious about my hands right now.
They're beautiful hands.
Yeah. Thank you. I have stories.
Now, how many of us, to sort of flip gears before we run out of time, have all of us got to at least touch PF2 yet?
Yes.
You have?
Yeah.
It was fun. My GM is in this room.
Ooh.
There you are.
Oh, nice.
Everybody looks at Linda.
It's been really...
Linda's getting a lot of casual shout-outs.
We love Linda. We've had a really interesting relationship with PF2 because, obviously the card game is based on Pathfinder, and if you shake the ground underneath that, we want to reflect. Mm-hmm. We want to reflect it, right? But, we've just constantly been, we've been saying, no, seriously, what's this going to be like in the new edition? So they go, and they go, well, no, it's not good enough. We need an actual answer. So I think our annoying, like slamming on the door over and over again and saying, we need to know what you're doing has had a small effect on the design team. As long as maybe it is to replace the door, I'm not really sure. But we've watched it evolve, and somebody asked if it would be compatible with the new edition of the role playing game. It's not compatible in any meaningful way. Like, you can't take a character you build up in the card game and just port him over to the Adventure Pass without some work.
Could my character play the Adventure card game in my campaign?
In your campaign, yeah. But I mean, what they're doing is fascinating, and so we have made a business of following up on things that fascinate us and making those into games, and so. A lot of the things that we wanted to do with this game were neatly supported by concepts that the RPG team had been noodling on. They've had 10 years. We've had 5. They've had 10 years to figure out what they hate about their game. So we've gone in and we've said, all right, we want to ride that horse together. And so what they're doing is a much more massive overhaul, I think, than what we're doing, because they're also concerned about compatibility. They want to make sure their products from the past are still good. But there's some big changes coming.
You say there's some big changes, and I'm sure that's true. But what I've recalled from playing the demo and what I'll have read and putting it into some practical use. Including modifying my Reign of Winter group with the unchanged rules that they have obviously based on in the new edition, is it doesn't feel all that different. It's the same feeling I got when like the Advanced Class Guide or the Occult Adventures came out, where I'm learning these new classes and the new rules there. But the fundamental bones are still the same. I still feel like I'm playing Pathfinder, even if a couple of the rules are different. It's almost like there's just mandatory archetypes slapped on all the base classes.
I think that's true. I think, when I've had the good fortune to reboot a lot of games. Obviously, I was on the Dungeons and Dragons team when it moved to Wizards of the Coast. I redid Axis and Allies. And just various other games. And fundamentally, you want to start from the position: what's going to make the people that you currently have feel like you did something really nice for them, and the new people that you're trying to get not have to worry about all the things that you did before, right? And so the new RPG is sleeker, it runs faster, it's cleverer, but fundamentally it's the same game, and that's true about the new edition of the card game too. Its goal is to just make it so that it's less like anything that we didn't like about it, it's not there anymore, right? And so, and something new comes in to replace that, and so I think it's going to be a really good year for Paizo because they won't have offended their current fans, and they'll bring in a lot of new ones. I think it's going
to
be great.
I do want to take about 5 minutes to just interact with the audience, so thank you very much, Mike. This is excellent. I feel like we've learned more about the Advanced Card Game than we have in a couple of years now, so always great to have you on.
I've noticed that you're almost done with your soda.
Yeah,
I'm winning.
It's a race, right? I took that big gulp like halfway through, and then my stomach was like, oh, if you do this again, I am empty. All right, stomach, we're good.
No, I think my stomach needed some vinegar right about now.
You're welcome. That
American fast food. You're welcome. Why don't you have any other food, Alex?
You're welcome for seconds.
No, I'm good. turning it over to anyone that has any questions for us, anything you'd like to talk about, anything you'd like us to talk about. Praise for Linda?
Yes.
Yeah.
We will accept all the praise for Linda.
Darren, you look like you had a thing.
No, I'm contemplating.
Okay.
Oh. All right. Then, Param, actually, following up on your thoughts on second edition. So when I'm playing it, it's kind of like when you're playing with a new GM, and you know you're running your character the way you always have, and then he's like, "That's not how that rule works," and it just blows your mind.
Right.
It feels like that for every other turn when I'm playing second edition. It's like, I'm the problem here. It's not a bad GM. It's that I don't know this game like I think I do. So that's like this awkward adjusting phase to this playtesting period.
Do you know what I really liked? The character sheets that were given are like a standard character sheet on the front, and then there's like a rules reference on the back that tells you where all the rules are. They have the icons that they've been talking about in like, or at least beta versions of the icons that they've been talking about in the blogs. They're actually really helpful, and I really like them.
Good.
Like, they're very intuitive, I thought.
So the one thing I had to get used to is that the single action icon is two separate things. It's a circle with, like, a chevron.
Right, but the
and
double...
And that's one icon, but
the double action has two of the little triangles, and the triple has three of them. So, like, you just look at the number of triangles. It just happens to be a little diamond there, too.
But when I was playing Spellcaster, it was, like, they're still separated by, like, here's the semantic... Here's verbal, so it's not.
Oh, so I played Sila, so I didn't see the casting. Sila was interesting because the way that she's written, it makes it sound like Lay on Hands is not as powerful in Pathfinder in Pathfinder 2e as it is in 1e. But you get it at level 1, and you can take a feat to make it back to where it is in Pathfinder, but you still have it at level 1. So you're like, oh wow, look at this thing. I touch a zombie and not only does it burn, but now it's easier for everybody to hit. It's like, oh, zombie there. And like there's no saving throw. You just touch them.
Right.
And they burn. It's great. It feels like it's one of the things in Pathfinder that makes Lay on Hands really difficult to attack people with is that if you're using one of those spells to attack an enemy, they get a saving throw. But the paladin is just like, no, I am so righteous, my touch burns you. There is no will save to resist this. You are evil and you need to go.
One observation about Sila that I really enjoy. So, you know, first edition Sila's pre-generated character plays like any paladin, but her backstory is completely different from any paladin. She was a thief who got caught stealing something and then like realized forgiveness and whatever and decided to take on a virtuous path. Mm-hmm. You feel her thief background in the second
because she can steal stuff and it's great.
Yeah,
it's like you can take things right out of people's pockets. It's like Sila, what are you doing?
And it's not because she's paladin; it's because she's Sila.
Yeah,
that's really important.
That's reflected in the card game too.
Excellent.
With the she moves boons to the bottom of the deck because she's just like,
I know what to do with those. Right? He's like, fine.
I've been
around.
Where's
the tasty monster on the other side of this?
Did you guys see Valoros in the playtest, the fighter?
Yeah, I played him.
Oh my gosh, he's got this cool like sudden charge ability where he's just so much faster, and it's great. It's like watching Sonic the Hedgehog zip around a level on like the GameCube. You're like, whoa, how did you get there, Valoros? What are you doing?
So one of the things you guys maybe don't realize is what's happening here with both the card game and the RPG is we're putting out all of our ideas, right, and seeing how people respond to them, right? So everybody who comes away with a story like that is being evaluated on a scale.
Are they evaluating me?
Yes, they're
evaluating. Oh my gosh.
So they're being evaluated in the following way. So it's like, oh, man, that guy was really excited. Should he have been?
These roguish paladins.
Right, exactly. Is it the right thing for somebody to be excited about that? Is it too good? Is it attracting too much attention away from the other things that we're trying to do? So there's really a phase where you're watching games being played at this convention, and you're like watching people and going, I might need to kill that, even though they're having a really good time, because it's interfering with what the overarching thing that I want to have happen here is. And other times you're just watching people having a good time and you're just sort of nodding back like, oh, that really worked, right?
Right.
And it takes a game designer some years to figure out that what the playtesters are saying about what they experience is the important thing. Not, you know, it's what is their, what are they doing, and what are they saying afterwards? Not, then they'll come up and they'll say things like, oh, you know what you should do, and then you can stop listening to them. but the point at which you're monitoring their reactions and just seeing like, oh, you're watching Valoros ping pong around the table, the game designers are going, oh man, did we just make him really like too good? Right, like, and so it's fascinating to watch the people who are watching you guys play, right? Because they're not uniformly happy when you guys are.
Harry, right. We need to get the computers ready. We're gonna get like a torrent of Mike Solanker hates fighters and wants them all.
The hit things with swords thing. Sword thing has been really bad for my career. So I'm kind of hoping it goes away soon.
All right, has anyone else in the audience played?
We're out of time, actually.
I hope you have, because it's fun. Come play ours, too.
All right, excellent. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you once again, Mike.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Go on, great party. Time, everyone.
Always a pleasure.
Throwing this soda away.
You should at least offer it.
That's a gift, Alex.
Does anybody want my vinegar backwash?
Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KD Con team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. Find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts, visit nodirectionpodcast.com.